Chapter 3.
Was Jack mad?
Nans asked after they were all situated in the car. No, he seemed resigned. A smile played on Lexi's lips as she thought about how far Jack had come with regard to her investigating murder cases. Nans and Jack had been neighbors, and she'd initially met him when she'd bought Nan's house, the one she and Jack lived in now. Of course, there had been that unfortunate incident in which she was suspected of murder that had thrown her and Jack together. But Nans had been thinking about fixing them up for months, though Lexi wasn't sure if that was because she thought Jack and Lexi would be good together, or if she just wanted to get closer to him so she could get in on more investigations. Either way, things had worked out pretty well for Nans and Lexi on both counts. At first, Jack hadn't been keen on either Nans or Lexi investigating. In fact, he'd been downright resistant. And while Lexi loved running the cup and cake, she must have inherited some of the investigating gene from her grandmother, because she couldn't resist digging into murders. It had been a bone of contention between her and Jack in the beginning, but now he was really coming around. Sometimes he even fed them clues on the side. Hopefully, this would be one of those times. She had a feeling they were going to need his help.
Well then, if he's resigned, we might as well take a ride over to the Pendleton house and see what we can see.
Nan slid her eyes over to Lexi. I really should be getting back to the bakery. The dejected sighs from the ladies in the back seat gave Lexi pause. But since Cassie is there now, I guess I could take a quick swing over. Maybe I can get a better look at the Kingsley property in person.
That's my girl. Nans patted her knee. Hopefully that drone is just lying out in the yard somewhere, and I can grab it,
Ida said. I don't know. Images of Sprinkles taking her favorite toys and hiding them sprang to mind. Sprinkles likes to hide her toys. We may have to do some hunting. Ruth rubbed her hands together.
Good. I love getting my hands dirty.
Maybe we can find the murder weapon, Helen said. He might keep it beside the door or in the garage.
The Pendleton house was on a quiet street, lined with tall maple trees. Birds twittered and chirped in the leaves overhead, while chipmunks darted in and out of an old stone wall at the edge of the property. Lexi had parked on the intersecting street, thinking they could walk to the Pendletons and then backtrack past the car and over to the next street to get a look at the Kingsley's yard in person. As they strolled toward the Pendletons, Ida grabbed Nan's arm and pulled her back.
Look, you can see the backyard from here, she whispered, pointing to a space in between the shrubs that revealed a section of the patio and the half-finished gazebo. Nans parted the shrubs and poked her face through, craning her neck to see. She turned and looked at them over her shoulder.
I don't see any dead body there, she whispered.
And apparently one hasn't been discovered, Ruth gestured to the quiet street.
There are no police cars, no commotion. Look, there's not even any crime scene tape.
Nans pulled her head out of the shrub and looked around, her forehead creasing.
You're right. That's odd. Where is the body?
You don't think she could have survived, do you?
Helen asked.
I don't think anyone could survive that fall. You saw her lying there. And the blood?
Nans shuddered.
But even if, by some miracle, she did survive, she would have surely needed a trip to the hospital, and Jack said there was no such emergency call.
Well, maybe that happened in between the time we left Jack's office and arrived here, Ruth suggested.
Nans pressed her lips together.
doubtful. But there's one way to find out.
She clutched her purse tighter and marched toward the Pendleton house. The house didn't look quite as dilapidated from the front as it had from the back. It was an English Tudor design with eyebrow windows and lightning rod-topped turrets. The front steps led to an old oak door made for giants and rounded at the top, with big iron hinges turned black with age. The windows had diamond-shaped grills, giving the house the look of an oversized cottage. Nance marched toward the door, her sensible beige shoes squeaking on the slate slabs that made up the walkway.
"Hold up there, Mona." Ida crouched to look under an azalea bush, brushing away a pile of crisp, dead leaves that had accumulated underneath. "That drone could be anywhere." She darted over to a giant rhododendron, pulling apart the branches and peering in. But Nance was already knocking on the front door. Lexi heard a chorus of barking, and then the door opened, revealing a man in his mid-60s. His salt-and-pepper hair was cut short and covered only the sides of his head. The top was shiny and bald. He was wearing a white T-shirt and an angry scowl. Four dogs circled the mud-stained cuffs of his tan chinos, and Lexi was relieved to see one of them was the black dog that had been on the roof. He looked Nance up and down with narrowed eyes. Then his gaze drifted over her shoulder to assess the rest of them.
"I told you ladies before, we don't like fans coming to the house unannounced."
He started to close the door. Nance stuck her foot in the door.
"Hey, we're not fans. We've come to see Olive."
The man stopped long enough to stare inquisitively at her.
"Aren't you the ladies from that fan club that's been hanging around here?"
Nan shook her head.
"No."
Something to their right caught his attention, and his eyes jerked in that direction where Ida was on her hands and knees rummaging through a forsythia bush.
"What is that woman doing over there?"
he demanded. Nan's head whipped around.
"Ida, stop that!"
She turned back to the man and whispered.
"Sorry, she's a little bit senile. That's why we've come, you see. My poor friend here, well, she doesn't have long, and she'd really like to see a famous author in person."
The man didn't seem at all sympathetic to Nan's story about Ida. He glanced back into the house over his shoulder, uncertainly.
"My wife is napping."
"Sure she is."
Ida, who had joined them, brushed the dirt from the knees of her tan polyester slacks.
"I'm sorry, but she works very hard and needs to rest. Maybe you could make an appointment on her website, like normal people. We don't like strangers just showing up here."
And then he slammed the door in their faces.
"Well, go figure that," Ruth said as they turned from the door and started down the walk. "Sounds to me like he was a little bit upset that we were asking for Olive."
"Well, he couldn't very well have her come to the door."
Helen leaned toward them and lowered her voice.
"Because she's dead."
"Now where do you think those dogs would have hidden that drone?"
Ida stood on the sidewalk, several feet down from the house. She rose on her tiptoes and looked over a tall hedge, trying to see into the backyard. She tisked and shook her head, then bent and moved a large rock aside with a grunt.
"Never mind the drone," Nan said. "Where did he hide the body?"
"Not to mention the murder weapon," Helen said.
"Why hide the body at all?"
Ruth asked.
"If there even is a body," Lexi said.
"If she'd survived the fall, then he would have been at the hospital with her, not answering the door and pretending she was napping inside,"
Helen pointed out. Ida picked up the edge of another rock, looked under it, and then squealed and dropped it,
when it revealed a large brownish-red wriggling centipede.
"Stop it, Ida. The dog didn't put your drone under a rock," Ruth said.
"Well, it's not lying around in the yard, at least not that I can see. We might need to make a midnight reconnaissance mission out here."
Ida's blue eyes sparkled.
"That might not be a bad idea, on a few counts," Helen said. "This case is starting to look mighty strange, and it wouldn't hurt for us to poke around for some evidence."
"True. I don't know if they have a security system, though."
Nance turned around and scanned the house and perimeter of the yard.
"You have to wonder, if Olive is dead, then why doesn't her husband want her body to be found? He must have a very unusual motive."
Nan stopped short before tripping over Ida, who had stopped to poke around under another shrub, pushing stones out of the way.
"Come on, Ida. We don't have time for this. We've got to get back to my place and do some research."
"But the drone. Jason will be looking for it soon, and I..."
"Don't worry, Ida. We'll find it. I promise you we'll leave no stone unturned in our search to prove there was a murder here. And that drone is a key piece of evidence."